happens when two scientists take their sterile gloves off, put their cowboy boots on, and clear the lab floor for a hoedown. From classical music lovers to foot-stompin' square dancers, power science couple Karen Rabe and Greg Moore demonstrate how intertwining their passions for science and music enhances their careers and their lives together. Karen, welcome to Science, Music, and Society. I'm super excited to have you both on here. So could both of you just individually tell us what you study as a physicist?
I'm a materials physicist. I do computations of materials, and I work with experimentalists to interpret the results of experiments on the materials that they study, and that we predict new materials as well.
I work in a branch of mathematical physics that I like to call physical mathematics, where we study the way mathematics informs attempts to find the most fundamental equations of physics. And we find that to write the fundamental laws of physics, we require ever-increasing mathematical sophistication. And the interesting thing is that it goes the other way. Physical ideas have been used to make breakthroughs in modern mathematics.
Yeah. Did both of you, you know, from an early age, did you know that you were going to study physics or just science in general? Or how did you get interested in that?
Oh, yeah. I was always interested in science. My father was a civil engineer, and my uncle and his father-in-law were cancer researchers at Sloan Kettering. And they just provided models for people who were very excited about, you know, the life of science. So that even when I didn't know what science was, that had a lot of appeal for me.
And, my grandmother was a science teacher. So I don't know. I can't remember not being interested in science.
So for a high schooler who wants to pursue science in the future, what are some qualities that you think that they should have in order to succeed in this field? Are there particular training or classes that they should take? What advice would you give?
Well, I think the main thing is curiosity, an interest in puzzle solving, curiosity, trying to understand things.
And I think, in terms of courses and preparation, I think the most important, you know, thing for sciences like physics is a really solid grounding in mathematics. Mm-hmm. So, if you're interested in physics, I generally encourage students to take, as you know, go as deep as they can into mathematics, because that's the language of physics. And so then they're prepared to go, you know, dig into physics with that.
Goes
foundation.
All the way back to Galileo in the essay called The Essayer, where he says that the book of nature is written in the language of mathematics. He didn't literally say that, but that's the way it's usually paraphrased.
Yes. Yeah. There's also a quote by Steve Jobs that he gave. And he's talking about how it was at a commencement speech. And he was saying, stay hungry, stay curious. And I think that also really applies to this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because there's always so much more that you can do with physics. So yeah, I totally agree. On a different note, though, I remember one of the first times that we first met, it was in the Flug Forum in Aspen, and both of us wanted to play the piano. And so I was wondering, growing up, what were your first experiences with music like?
Yeah, so that was an interesting question. So I actually have a very distinctive memory of as a very young child going to a Carabacone class. And I don't know if you know that method of music instruction, but there was a big music clef on the floor, and we were supposed to jump from note to note. And I guess as the music played, like when the music went up, we'd jump up on the clef and jump down. And, you know, I don't remember anything else about it, but I just remember jumping around on the music clef.
Well, I don't know. I think probably my first musical experience was probably my mother singing to me as a baby, but I don't remember that. I do remember taking piano lessons as a very young kid and really liking my teacher.
What age did you start playing piano?
I don't know, maybe six or seven. I don't remember exactly.
Right, but when we knew each other in college, Greg would play the piano after dinner every day, sometimes for a couple of hours.
Yeah, I did a lot of piano playing.
And, you know, like in the dining hall
too,
where there was a piano. So yeah, I guess that piano competition goes back.
Greg, do you still actively play the piano?
Not since I started Square Dance Calling.
Oh, okay.
There's only 24 hours in a day,
yes.
So I'm still doing a lot of science. And Square Dance Calling, I still do music because Square Dance Calling involves singing. So I basically switched a few years ago from intense piano playing to singing.
Okay, I see.
One of the hardest decisions about, you know, starting to do Square Dance Calling was I realized that I'd have to make a choice there.
Right. And how did you get into square dancing?
Yeah. So we were thinking that we wanted to do something that would, help our aging brain. And we read that that dancing is perfect. It has every element that you could possibly want to counteract the effects of aging. It's got, the music, it has motion, it's got, social interaction, and it's fun. And so we had done some kind of square dancing at an outdoor festival, and I had done some a long time ago. So we went on Google and looked for a place where we could do square dancing around here. And to make a long story short, it actually turns out that at the nearest square dancing club here, which is called Rutgers Promenaders, it used to be a Rutgers College club, we have two of the, best callers in the region. So we stumbled on a club with these really, skilled and talented and fun callers, and we just got sucked in and, never turned back.
I might add, you have some great callers in the Houston area.
That's true.
Really? I didn't know that.
You have one of the legendary callers of all time is actually north of Houston.
Right. And we're actually coming to Houston next week to Willis, which is, right near Conroe,
to
study with him for a week.
Wow.
Yeah. So he has a school, and we and a few other people are coming from around the world to spend a week working with him and improving our singing calls.
Wow. Cool. I might just have to go check that out. and so this was all before COVID. You got into square dancing before COVID hit, right? And
so we started dancing in 2016.
Okay, 2016.
And then we started calling in 2017.
Oh, okay. And when you started calling, did you just pick that up did you learn how to do it while you square danced, or did you have to take lessons for that?
Square dance calling is incredibly hard. So what happened is so Karen mentioned that we had two superb callers at Rutgers Promenaders. One of them, Betsy Gatta, is an internationally known, caller. And she offered a school, a local school on square dance calling, which was only a bicycle ride away. So we said, okay, here's the master. If we're ever going to learn how to do this, this is a great opportunity. So we went to her school, which is just a bicycle ride away. It was a couple of weekends.
Yeah, it was about 6 weekends.
Something like that, something like 6 Saturdays. And that's how we got started. And then since then, we've been to other schools. And yes, there are square dance calling schools. And it takes a lot of training. It's one of those things like piano playing that looks so, right? You know, Bach once said that piano playing is easy. All you have to do is put, you know, press the right keys at the right time. You know, what's the problem? Well, it's a little bit like that with square dance calling. It looks very easy. And there are even stories of dancers who come up to the caller and say, oh, I can do that. This is, you know, this looks pretty easy. And they try and they fall flat on their face. It takes a lot of training.
Yes. Yeah, I watched your videos and it's a lot of like, I guess when you're dancing, it's a lot of like, you have to be ready for the next move, right? Because there are just so many, I guess with the calling, there are just so many different things that you can do. But I also realized we didn't really get into this, but could you just briefly explain to our audience what square dancing is?
Yes.
Okay, right. Well,
Karen,
I'm going to share the screen for that because we have a few slides that we... So the very basics of modern square dancing is that it's a dance form with four couples who start arranged in a square. And in the picture, you see the four couples at an MIT club called Tech Squares. And so there's the boys are on the left of the couple, the girls are on the right of the couple. And that, those are just dancer designations. Anybody who identifies as any gender or non-binary can dance either part as long as they, just remember which part they're dancing. The dancer is led by a caller who issues the commands, the calls, which are code words or phrases for established sequences of dance moves that the dancers know. And the dancers dance the moves associated to the call as the caller delivers them. Dancers don't know the sequence ahead of time, so they have to react. They react in real time. And, you know,
that's part of the fun.
And callers might follow a pre-planned sequence of calls, or in many cases they're improvising as people dance.
Okay, so you know some calls hearken to the historical roots of square dancing, which is in folk dancing from many parts of the earth, and there are calls like Do-sa-do and Allemand left and promenade, which clearly are referring to French folk dancing from hundreds of years ago. Then there are descriptive calls. If you imagine that group of eight people on the sides of a square, and I said, all join hands up to the middle and you come on back. Well, everybody would know what to do. They would join hands and they would go up and step back. Or jaw join hands, circle left, circle to the left, around you go. And they would know what to do instinctively. And then there are other calls with very colorful names where you have to be taught what is the meaning of the call. There are several steps involved. And those on the screen, you see some names of those like Ferris wheel and recycle and chain reaction and tally ho. So,
right. So we can, just to explain a little bit more about what the dance experience is like. Dances are a series of 15-minute sessions called tips, and the first half of the tip is a patter section where a caller calls the calls to music and people dance. And we have a little clip, you know, that shows a well-known caller calling to a large floor here.
Only good when they get back on side square, three when they get before, four hands are right on the go when they get four, right on it to the outside two, and fear to the left and fair, sweep when they come right in, and do a double pass, crack two, come run and cram and go to the left, you hinge, then walk and dodge and chase right, come on, cram on the go, boy, run around the girl, and then do a run on it through, turn a girl around, pass through when you bend your line, pass through with the wheel and lead to do, center square through the free, quick pull around, let down, bang on the corner, say whoa,
So you might notice a few things. There are many squares on that floor. It's a crowded room. So there are many groups of eight people dancing together, cooperating together, collaborating together. And they're also having a great time. You can see a lot of smiles. And when you hear the Allemand left, that's like the you might have heard a woo or, you know, a little cry of joy, because that means that they've executed everything correctly and they know they're in the right place and they're ready to go to a right and left grand, which is easy. And they've done all the hard stuff really easily, right, really well. And okay, so shall we go on?
So, well, there's
One more example.
I think Greg just wanted to show one other, a short video clip where you can actually see a little bit better what the calls, you know, what different calls are like. So shall we just?
So this is from Tech Squares with another great caller, Ted Lizotte, calling.
Right, and the calls are listed on the right hand. The sequence of calls is listed on the right hand side, so you can, as you can hear the call, you can read them from the list, and also see the, see the group do it.
Peek a bow to the partner, and the corner is two. Walk around your corner. Turn your partner up on the left. Head ladies center for the teacup chain. Head square through. Swing through. Boy run around the girl. Couples circulate. Chain down the line. Send her back with a Dixie style. Trade the wave. All eight circulates. Swing through here. Boy run around a girl. Bend the line. Load the boats.
Sing. So that was just a little clip with some, so you could actually see individual calls. And so I'm going to stop sharing here.
Greg, you mentioned how couples, they know that they're in the right position and they're ready to go on. How do they know if they're in the right position or not?
Oh, because at the beginning, so imagine again, you have a square with couples on each side. The couples, the two people in the couples are called partners, naturally enough. Well, on the next side, adjacent to the partner, is what's called the corner. And so if they're doing an Alaman left with the corner and then they see their partner, then they know they've done it right. And then you're going to hear cheers and, and whoopees and all things like that, because what you saw in the previous one, or in both of those clips, is people are executing fairly complicated moves. And it would be easy to make a mistake to turn right when you're supposed to turn left, or something like that.
Or two people get switched by mistake.
Yeah. And so after all of that, that's sort of the dessert. You get the Alaman left, and it's such a rush actually to resolve that, because you've been working in this complicated pattern with all these different people, and then you get back to the person you started with, and it's very satisfying. Okay.
I see.
Right. And then you say promenade home. You're with your partner, or you are home. And everyone know, and then you get started again.
And people really get excited. People really love that.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah. And I also know that you just came back from a square dancing convention, I think last month in June.
That's right.
How many of those conventions do you typically attend a year?
Oh, I guess before, we went to more, before the pandemic, but I guess we'd probably go at least four or five times a year to different weekend festivals and the national convention weekend festivals.
That was before COVID,
right?
Okay.
And so now people are getting back in. Yeah, we're planning to go to
one or two.
Yeah. So yes, not quite at the same level, but there is live dancing, which has started up pretty much everywhere now.
Mm-hmm. And then during COVID, there were virtual conventions?
Yes. So the square dancing community, during the lockdowns, the worst part of the pandemic, the square dancing community responded to that in an interesting way by doing what's called dancing over Zoom. So the caller would call, like Karen and I would be sitting here calling over Zoom. And because people couldn't get together in a hall, they would basically be dancing in their living room or garage or kitchen or wherever. And because they aren't going to get eight separate people together, they're probably, it's just two people in a household, they would have to dance with phantoms. Oh. So they would have to not only do all these moves, but also imagine where they are in the square and where the phantoms are. Oh. And
although to make it easier, we also modified the square dancing so it was two couples instead of four. Okay. So they were fewer imaginary people.
Yeah, but still it does require a higher skill level. And so
not everyone enjoyed that.
But there is actually an international community. I mean, we've met people from far away, from Australia and British Columbia.
And actually today at lunchtime we were dancing with people from Australia and Germany.
Austria.
And Canada. Yeah. Austria.
You know, so there's this international community of Zoom dancers.
Right.
So that was something that, which was enabled by.
Right.
By,
that was one benefit. By Zoom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was
one silver lining.
Silver lining. You always take what you can get.
Yes.